This podcast contains strong language and descriptions of a sexual nature, and as the title suggests, deals with the details of rape trials. This is the rape trial that will have consequences like no other.
The defendants sat in a row in the dock behind glass panels, and the jury heard the charges against them read out.
For those involved,
26-year-old Paddy Jackson and 24-year-old Stuart Olding are charged with the rape of a 19-year-old woman in Jackson's Belfast home.
And for the criminal justice system.
I think a lot of people were just horrified at the reality exposed in a high-profile case to what was happening in many other cases but people hadn't seen.
We're all following this trial. At work, at home, and on Twitter.
Really hope Paddy Jackson is not guilty.
Why would anyone want to report a sexual assault if they're going to be dragged through this?
I'm going to take an educated guess and go with innocent.
That girl deserves a lot more support. Breaks my heart.
But there are dozens of rape trials every year in Northern Ireland. So what's so special about this one? This is Rape Trial Episode 1. Accused.
It must be an Ulster try. Surely it is. Olding for the corner. He's over and he's down.
Rugby stars Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding play for Ulster and Ireland. And in June 2016, they're just back from a tour of South Africa.
Ireland got off to a flying start. Jackson kicked the decisive point to make history and spark scenes of celebration in Cape Town.
You know, for a team that hasn't been together for that long, it just shows the character of, you know, the country and the lads that stepped up.
Ireland beat South Africa, and sports journalists hailed Paddy Jackson as a leader of men. 2 weeks later, he was still celebrating. Paddy would later describe himself at this time as the happiest of men.
Now, some of the details in the case are quite shocking, but can you give us a picture first of what the young woman at the centre of this trial is alleging?
A group of young women, girls, including the complainant, went out to Ollie's nightclub at the Merchant Hotel on Monday the 27th of June 2016, and they were in the VIP.
In the early hours of the morning, fortnight after Cape Town, Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding are in the VIP section of a nightclub. Paddy invites a few people back to his house in South Belfast. A young woman joins them, and she's been out partying, celebrating the end of her A-level exams. Be warned, you're about to hear graphic descriptions. Just before 5 in the morning, she leaves the party. A taxi driver will later tell the court she sobs to herself on the way home. The next day, Stuart sends a message to Paddy and a few others.
We're all top shaggers.
Paddy sends one back.
There was a lot of spit roast last night.
The woman messages her friend.
Worst night ever. So I got raped.
She goes to the police. Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding are arrested, but released. The BBC gets the story a few months later.
The Ulster rugby players Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding say they reject any allegations of sexual offences against them. They were questioned about an alleged incident at a house in South Belfast and then released.
From this point on, Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding are no longer famous for just playing rugby. The police haven't charged them, but their names are now connected with sex offence allegations.
I was surprised because in Northern Ireland, that doesn't normally happen.
Paul Dugan is Stuart Olding's lawyer.
It's not written anywhere. It's just a custom that has really developed in terms of the information that goes into the public domain. So, for example, somebody who is arrested, you know, a 30-year-old from South Belfast was arrested in connection with, and that's maybe as far as it will go.
Now their names are public. People on Twitter want their say about what they think happened. And this is before there's any information out there.
I believe in our guys.
Seems like a nice lad.
I'd say Paddy Jackson is regretting the group.
Remember, no charges have actually been brought against them. Yet Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding are the talk of Belfast, especially at dinner parties. These are former grammar school boys with promising careers ahead of them. Paul Dugan.
It allows people to jump to all sorts of conclusions, erroneous or otherwise, before evidence is even presented. And thereby forming a view potentially in their own mind as to the guilt or innocence of the individual concerned. And I just think that is hugely, hugely unfair.
This is the trial that will overhaul the criminal justice system.
I have to say that despite being in the law for a very, very long time, this at the latter end of my career is one of the proudest achievements that I have brought about.
A month after the rugby rape trial, Sir John Gillan is asked to interrogate how well the courts are working for sex offences in Northern Ireland. For many years, Sir John Gillan was a High Court judge. Not an easy job during the Troubles, when judges had round-the-clock protection. You had to be fearless, unflappable. Lawyer Paul Dugan remembers his days in court with Sir John.
He had a reputation. He was a formidable practitioner. He was everything that you would have expected in a judge. Brilliant in the law, but a formidable character to appear in front of because he expected the highest standards.
Northern Ireland's Minister of Justice, Naomi Long, believes Sir John was exactly the right person to review the justice system for sexual offences.
He is somebody who is not afraid of, I suppose, rocking the boat and thinking a bit differently about things. And so he was perfectly suited to the job because he asked the tough questions.
As a seasoned barrister, Sir John has spent decades working on rape and sexual assault cases, and yet even he's astonished by the scale of the problem.
Despite almost 50 years in the law, defending these cases, prosecuting these cases, presiding over trials when I was a judge, I was surprised by the overall extent of the flaws in the system that were thrown up in this review.
His task is to identify concerns with these kind of trials and come up with solutions.
Here was an opportunity to face the problems, to redefine the architecture of the rule of law in this area and establish a series of confidence-building blocks into the system, none of which on their own could solve the problem, but which cumulatively are intended to introduce radical overall change.
He concludes that it's not right to identify anyone before the police have finished their investigation. It's not fair for people to see them on the news before all the evidence has been gathered.
It should be an offence to name a person who is being investigated for a serious sexual offence. It is outrageous that people who have not even been charged should be connected with these offences. So that's the first thing. There should be a new law introduced to make that illegal, and there should be harsh penalties for those, particularly in the media, who transgress it.
While the BBC acted completely legally in reporting the arrests, Sir John is helping to drive change in the system. Almost always now, suspects in sexual offences will only be named after a decision has been made to take the case forward. That means there won't be months of speculation before charges are even brought. Eight months after their names first appear in the press, Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding make headlines again.
Two Ulster rugby stars are to be prosecuted for offences relating to allegations of rape.
The Public Prosecution Service announced they have enough evidence to begin legal proceedings. The young men will be put on trial at Belfast Crown Court. If convicted, they'll most likely get a sentence of around 5 years in prison. And their rugby careers will surely be over. It's high stakes now. To get to the next episode and more in the Assume Nothing series, don't forget to hit subscribe.
Help and support is available at bbc.co.uk/actionline.
This podcast contains descriptions of a sexual nature and, as the title suggests, deals with the details of rape trials. It's about to start. Court 12. Belfast Crown Court.
The trial has begun of the Ulster rugby players Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding, who are accused of raping a 19-year-old woman in Belfast.
A lot of the attention has focused on the accused in the rugby rape trial. They're famous sportsmen in Northern Ireland. Missing is any talk of the alleged victim, but that's about to change. People line up to get a seat in the public gallery. Paul Dugan is one of the defence lawyers.
The courtroom was packed to capacity on every day at every level, and in fact there were times that you know, we couldn't get into court initially until, you know, they made space for us to make our way through.
People were on bus trips going down to the court for the day. It was absolutely shocking.
Sonia McMullen works for Women's Aid in Belfast.
Personally, I was meant to go down and attend the court as I would do sometimes, but I felt I couldn't. I just thought it was so inappropriate and invasive, really, whenever you've seen how many people were allowed to squash into that court every day.
Alleged rape victims are granted lifelong anonymity by law. But if you go to court, that anonymity can go out of the window. This is Rape Trial Episode 3. Audience.
The woman involved has been questioned in the witness box. She's giving evidence from behind a curtain, but she is visible to the legal teams and to the jury. And her image is also visible to the public gallery on a television monitor screen.
So there's a curtain around her in the witness box, but those in the courtroom can still see her on the big screen. Which, Sonia McMullen says, is pointless.
We need to maintain that anonymity. And how do you do that in a packed courtroom? Bus trips coming down from Ballymena to watch the show in the Belfast court.
Many miles away, in London, Winnie M. Lee watches the news coverage of the trial closely.
I remember hearing that it was a very, very packed gallery, and that is a horrifying thought.
She has a very personal reason for following the trial.
A packed gallery of strangers is insulting because it makes you feel like you're a spectacle. It makes you feel that people are there just to find some kind of entertainment at your own expense and some entertainment in your own horror and your own trauma.
Winnie's interest goes deeper than a distressing experience. Back in 2008, she had been invited to Belfast as part of an international delegation celebrating the 10th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. She'd studied Irish folklore at Harvard University. Having never been to Belfast before, and being a keen walker, she decided to go on a hike through one of the city's country parks. But that walk changed her life forever.
According to the police, the teenage attacker approached his victim and struck up a conversation with her. They walked a short distance before the youth dragged his victim into the bushes and raped her.
2 days later, the rape was featured on a local phone-in show.
I'm with you here till 10:30, and coming up on the programme, the brutal rape of a tourist in a West Belfast forest park. What a welcome to Northern Ireland.
It's not a good news message.
It is certainly.
But nevertheless, I want to try and ensure it never ever happens again. If that was my son, I would hand him over and I would disown him. We've got a lot of evil people living in our society, especially teenagers.
It was very strange to hear a whole bunch of different complete strangers calling in and weighing in and giving their opinion on, again, a very personal and private thing which had happened to me, and to be using my own rape almost as a talking point.
The glare of publicity might not have been quite as bright, but like the rugby trial, Winnie's case was heard in Northern Ireland. A year after she was raped, she returned to give evidence at the trial of her attacker.
I mean, it was terrifying, the thought of having to go into a room full of strangers, knowing that it was open to the public and that it was open to journalists and to the press, and to be asked very intimate questions about what had happened to me.
But just before she was due to give evidence, her attacker pleaded guilty and the trial was stopped. He was given an 8-year prison sentence. Sometime afterwards, Winnie M. Lee waived her lifelong right to anonymity. She wrote a novel based on her experience, Dark Chapter, and started talking publicly about what had happened to her.
In the end of the day, I wasn't actually ashamed of what happened to me. I mean, obviously it was embarrassing and humiliating and traumatizing, but I very soon realized that what had happened to me, you know, wasn't my fault. I just happened to cross paths with the perpetrator, and all of the crime lay on that individual's shoulders to decide to follow me and rape me.
Making courts open to the public is a fundamental principle of open justice. The point is to put the trial under scrutiny to make sure it's all properly conducted. Aside from a call-in show discussion, the verdict in Winnie's case didn't gather much attention. But when rugby stars go on trial, the scrutiny leads to some of the most radical judicial recommendations of recent times, led by Sir John Gillan.
It was in no small measure a theme that occurred time and time again when I was speaking to complainants. The humiliation, the public humiliation, in front of, at times, very substantial people in court.
The queues outside the rugby rape trial are not lost on Sir John, the spectacle of it all.
When you think about this, this is the most humiliating experience that men and women have suffered in their lives. And to have to give evidence, as occurred in a recent trial in Northern Ireland, in front of the public gaze of over 100 people, is simply unacceptable and not conducive to securing truth and justice and dignity.
Naomi Long is the Justice Minister in Northern Ireland.
In a small society, in a small community like Northern Ireland, people have been able to be identified. People pick up on little bits of, you know, evidence that were given, and you have a complainant who suddenly everyone is gossiping about what happened. And that is completely traumatic for victims, but also, again, a deterrent for people coming forward.
In the same courts as the rugby rape trial, sometime afterwards, a teenager gave evidence. She said she had been abused. She was offered a private room down the corridor to give her evidence. She talked into a camera, and then it was shown live on a screen in the courtroom. Her dad, we're calling him Luke, tried to reassure her before the trial started.
You've got a young girl who's suddenly saying, well, who's going to see my video link?
An actor is voicing Luke's words to protect his daughter's identity.
At least we were able to say, well, look, there's no public in. It's only going to be the jury and the judge, you know. So in the future, it's not as if someone's going to bump into you on the street and go, oh, that's the girl who was sexually assaulted.
The girl gave her evidence from the private room. Everyone in the courtroom could see and hear her. But although her dad was worried about his daughter being identified, he actually thinks there are positives for the court to be kept open to the public. That's because he's highly critical of the way the defence team treated his daughter. And we will come to that.
Calling her a liar, asking her completely irrelevant questions, just to try and trip her up.
Luke worries that if the public aren't allowed in, then they won't see what happens in these trials. They won't witness what he thought in his daughter's case was an outrageous interrogation of a vulnerable victim.
Anybody in that courtroom to see even the look on some of the court staff, police staff, when they saw the behaviour of the defence. Sometimes you think the public needs to see that, because that's just wrong. You know, it's so, so wrong.
In his final conclusion, Sir John decides that the press should stay in the courtroom during sexual assault and rape trials, but the public should be banned. This reform will make legal history. The public have never before been excluded from these court cases in Northern Ireland.
There needs to be legislation to deal with that. And of course, legislation takes time. I recognise that. I would like it to be introduced tomorrow, but I recognise that it takes time. But I hope it's going to be done within the next year to 18 months.
Justice Minister Naomi Long will be the one to push this new reform through.
The public will be allowed to come in for the sentencing, for example, and for the final judgment, but they will not be there throughout the case. So we won't have the problems that we experienced in some other cases where you had members of the public tweeting about what was happening in the courtroom.
Sir John and the Justice Minister hope that in the future more people will come forward to report a rape if they know they won't have to give evidence in front of the public. But in 2018, the young woman is at the centre of a frenzy and is about to speak in front of over 100 people in the public gallery, with thousands following the case on social media. An audience is waiting. To get to the next episode and more in the Assume Nothing series, don't forget to hit subscribe.
Help and support is available at bbc.co.uk/actionline.
This podcast contains very strong language and descriptions of a sexual nature, and as the title suggests, deals with the details of rape trials. The trial hits the headlines every day.
A woman who has accused two Ulster rugby players of raping her broke down in a Belfast court today.
Today's evidence featured graphic details of the alleged attack.
More on what we've been covering for some weeks, and if there are children around, you might want to turn the radio down for a few minutes.
Journalists are live tweeting the trial from the press benches, and hundreds are responding, tweeting, blogging, and putting up posts on Facebook.
That girl in the Paddy Jackson court case in Belfast is the most inspiring, brave woman. I've never been prouder of someone I did not know.
Nobody forced her to get dolled up, go to a nightclub, and go home with a bunch of lads.
The trial goes on for 9 weeks. and there's huge anticipation for the verdict. But as you're about to find out, the verdict did anything but bring an end to the social media commentary. This is Rape Trial Episode 9, Acceptance.
There was almost total silence apart from the forewoman of the jury reading out the verdicts. There were about 150 people in court, 100 seats in the public gallery, every one of them filled.
The young woman at the heart of the case has waited 18 months for this moment. She's been cross-examined by four barristers over 8 days. She's had no legal representation. She's been called a bitch, a slut on social media, and her name has been made public. If convicted, the young men will most likely get a sentence of around 5 years in prison. A man we're calling Matt remembers that wait, when the jury are deciding on your fate. He was on trial a few years ago, accused of raping a woman. His words are voiced by an actor.
The jury were sent away, so we left the courtroom and went to the little cafe at the court. Your family and your legal team are consumed with reassuring each other. In a funny way, you're kind of this island. You feel as though you're floating away, looking down on things.
If found guilty, Matt could expect a prison sentence.
Even though I only had to wait 20 minutes, it felt like I kind of lived the entire experience, the entire 2 years in that moment. You end up hugging people far too tightly because you don't know if it'll be the last hug you'll give them.
The jury discussed the rugby rape case amongst themselves for 3 hours and 40 minutes. Then they come back into court.
Unanimous verdicts on all counts. Paddy Jackson, not guilty of rape, not guilty of sexual assault. Stuart Olding, not guilty of rape.
It's all over. Matt was acquitted too.
And the verdict was given. Just like, it's almost like you've been carrying around a 10-ton weight and you can feel it fall. And the power in your body just goes. I was just overcome by the whole thing. And it was everything for me and my family.
Luke and his teenage daughter, who we've heard from in previous episodes, waited nervously for the verdict in their trial. The girl had told the court she was abused multiple times by a family member. It's taken 2.5 years to come to court. And this is their moment.
He was actually found not guilty, which needless to say you can imagine is absolutely devastating.
The conviction rate is around 2%.
It does make the healing process much, much harder. You know, my daughter's saying we've went through 2.5 years of hell, and basically now it boils down to those 12 people and the jury didn't believe me.
Paddy Jackson wipes away tears as he walks out of court.
I'd just like to thank the judge and the jury for giving me a fair trial.
Lawyer Paul Dugan reads a statement written by his client, Stuart Olding.
I want to acknowledge publicly that though I committed no criminal offence, I regret deeply the events of that evening. I am sorry for the hurt that was caused to the complainant.
Paddy Jackson's solicitor has something to say too.
On the face of it, this robust assertion of its independence by the jury, embodied in these acquittals, may suggest that the trial process is in good health. That is not the case. Vile commentary expressed on social media, going well beyond fair comment, has polluted the sphere of public discourse and raised real concerns about the integrity of the trial process.
But it doesn't stop people posting their response to the verdict.
I fully believe Paddy Jackson is guilty.
All I can say is, if Paddy Jackson ever walks onto a rugby pitch again, I hope he's targeted by every player who believes her.
Over 40,000 people used the hashtag #IBelieveHer.
I suppose we all really probably joined in. I joined in that too with that hashtag.
Sonia McMullen at Women's Aid was one of them.
And probably went too far on some of the posts for Women's Aid that I think I got told off about. So, but, you know, the social media around that, I don't know for that young woman if that made her feel empowered in any way that, okay, the nation is behind me here. And so social media has its advantages and disadvantages in all playing fields.
There were thousands of tweets from all over the world.
Paddy Jackson, Jesus Christ, he's innocent. End of story.
Fuck you, Paddy Jackson, and fuck you to the legal system, and fuck you to that jury.
Lawyer Paul Dugan.
The public get a perception of something and they'll never be disabused of that, irrespective of what the outcome is. And if they don't respect the outcome, as to a degree happened in Jackson Olding, that's a verdict from a jury. So what? We don't believe it. We'll believe what we want to believe. Once you get into that, then society just becomes fragmented.
And still it goes on. 3 years after the trial, and an image of Paddy Jackson being hurt in a rugby match is circulating on Twitter.
Here's Paddy Jackson getting a boot in the balls. You're welcome. Hashtag I believe her.
For Matt too, the case still casts a shadow.
I don't do the same job anymore. I don't live in the same house anymore. Pretty much everything about my life has changed. I always say to people, I don't talk about that anymore, because I don't want to justify the accusation with any more time or pain, which is true. But also, it's always there. The accusation and what you went through to clear your name is always there.
Sophie, who we heard from in an earlier episode, accused two men of abusing her as a child. She went through 7 days of cross-examination, but the case didn't make it to the end.
It was dismissed on technicalities. The whole thing, to put it plain and simple, was a farce from start to finish.
And she too took a long time to recover from the court case.
It was nearly a year before I was sort of, you know, back to wanting to go out places or do anything. My mental health was suffering severely from the whole trauma of the whole thing. The justice system let me down, and I pity anybody who has to go through that.
Northern Ireland finds itself at the forefront of radical reform of rape trials. Work has already started on Sir John Gillan's proposals to try and improve the court process.
I do believe that we are going to see a fresh approach to the rule of law in this area. I am satisfied that complainants in the future will meet a fundamentally different approach to that they have suffered in the past. And so far as accused persons are concerned, I also believe that these reforms, many of which will benefit them, will also ensure a fairer and more just system from their point of view.
If the rugby rape trial happened today, under Sir John's new reforms, the two men wouldn't have been named before being charged. There might not have been an 18-month wait for the trial to get to court, and the alleged victim would have had legal advice before the trial started. And there are more reforms coming through.
Let me finish on a positive note. All of this indicates that the moment of change has arrived. I think hope is in the air.
Assume Nothing is a BBC Northern Ireland production. It was written and produced by Sarah Mole, presented by Amy Beth McNulty. Commissioning and executive editor was Andy Martin.
Help and support is available at bbc.co.uk/actionline.